This is CliffCentral.com.
Kuli Chana, when you become independent, the world opens up to you, but it is scary, man.
Yeah.
Because you're on your own, right?
Jeez, dude.
I mean, I remember.
I'm looking at you right now.
Yeah. I met you a long time ago, and you had the power of a number of things behind you. Inordinate talent. There's a talent there.
Yeah.
There's confidence, because you have to have that. No one else is going to give that to you in the beginning.
Yeah.
There was a business brain.
Yeah.
And there was a huge hard-working ethic. Like, you're not afraid to work hard.
Yeah.
You're not one of those people who's going to sit at home and hope fortune comes your way. But sometimes all of that combined doesn't make it easy, because you still have to have lucky breaks. You still have to meet the right people.
Jeez.
You still have to get one or two powerful deals in place to make it all start to happen.
Yeah.
And until that happens, it's lonely as hell.
Very lonely.
And it's poor. There's no money running around.
Jeez.
I mean, when you think of like where you're at now, do you sometimes go, I'm so lucky? Or do you give credit to, in equal measure maybe, the talent and the ethic and the skill set that you've got? I mean, how do you apportion it in your head? How do you figure out in your head, how did I get here?
I still feel like I'm one of the luckiest dudes I know. Because I'm not, you know, growing up, was very lazy. I was raised by my gran, and she used to reiterate this to me, like, listen, if you don't work hard, you know, like, I wouldn't want to die, and like, I don't want you to ever struggle. She used to just, like, go on about that. So I had to learn a little bit about work ethic and just, you know.
Because those old people, they didn't have an option. It wasn't like you could be a Kardashian. Our grandparents, you tell them about like how you become a reality TV show, or how you can reach a million people with a tweet, and they're like, what? That's not possible. That ain't
exactly.
Right.
Exactly. You couldn't just tap out and become a Kardashian. Nah, you know, so I had to learn a thing about, you know, talent versus skill, you know, and I also learned a lot about how success can fail you, right? Success will fail you. It's like you will hit the top and you stop doing all these things you were doing when you were coming up.
You maybe, do you think it's because people start to believe in their own bullshit?
Yeah.
Or nobody tells them the truth?
Yeah, you do start believing in your own hype.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I remember a time when I was doing like 5 shows a day, a night, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I always on the road. And, you know, at some point, man, it just...
It's not a real life.
Yeah.
It doesn't, it's not realistic. You don't you don't have normal conversations.
Thank you.
You don't eat normal meals.
Mm-mm.
You don't hang around with normal people.
No.
It's this weird, rarefied life, and you can't make good decisions in that place if you're there all the time.
You're just on this hamster wheel.
Yeah.
You're making money. You never really get to enjoy it. You know, you caught up in your own hype. And what's the word I'm looking for? Is for me, I think the moment was when I realized I don't even get those nerves anymore before I get on stage. I don't even get any.
It became normal?
Yeah, it became like, oh, cool, it's that time again. Jeez, man, you could wake me up from a coma. I'd jump on stage and do the damn thing.
When you were doing those, when did you sleep? Would you catch like a 20-minute nap on the way somewhere? Or, I mean, how did it work? Because your body takes its toll, right?
Yeah, your body takes its toll. I remember a time, I mean, Red Bull was my thing, you know. Yeah. Red Bull and vodka.
That's not a good combo.
Bad combination. I had to find out the hard way. Yeah, and those are my two best friends. Shout out to Red Bull and Absolute for, you know, yeah.
Well, they got you through best the tough time.
Yeah. I was just using it the wrong way. Now I think I'm using it the right way.
Isn't it
way.
Because one makes you slower and one makes you faster? Like, one affects your heartbeat in a plus way and the other one's a minus. So the two compete and then you end up with like a heart attack, right?
Dude, you end up with like dizzy spells every day. It's
and
like
you cannot sleep if you drink vodka and Red Bull.
Yeah. You're just spinning and spinning. And I remember going to see a doctor. He was like, no. You need to take better care of yourself. And you know, the thing that was tough around that time for me was like also, besides my health, and it was just, you're disconnected from your family. You're missing out on all the weddings, the christenings, the funerals, the connections. You know, you're not connecting with anybody. But yeah, man, you know, you got to go through that to get to this place.
I'm very impressed by the collaboration between you and Perno on Absolute, because as I said to you, I've got three of those bottles of Absolute vodka. You did the design.
So
you were involved in
so that, I was involved in the design
in a hands-on
so,
way, right?
So they sent me some ideas and I had to sign it off. And I have to say, you know, best collaboration I've ever had, just based on the approach to the whole thing from the beginning, was we're looking for an artist to endorse just based on their musical journey, just based on their story.
A lot of these brands, they say they want to be involved in music, but what they really want is to just take your music and use it for their purposes.
And move on.
That's not what these guys did. And you know, they're not advertisers with us. I know Melanie who runs the White Spirits for Perno. And
yeah, you guys go way back.
She's a friend of mine. Yeah. But I will say this, that I think it takes enormous foresight to be able to see the potential of a collaboration with an artist and to not exploit each other. Dude. For you to go, oh, well, I'll do whatever these guys want. I'll just take their money. Or for them to go, we just want this guy's music. And as soon as we can get that out of him, then he's on his own. This is a real thing. Like, you're a creative director there.
Yeah.
And you now help them make decisions around where they want to take the brand. And I think that's – they're getting info and intel out of you that they wouldn't get from anyone else.
Exactly. And it's so effortless, right? It's not a hustle. And what it did for me – you know, it happened at a time I was like fresh out of that saga with SAPS.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Right?
I've had mine.
That was the last. Oh, yeah.
I remember.
That was the last time we spoke. I think you were still at 5FM.
Yeah, you've been shot, man.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know.
Motherfuckers.
Motherfucking cops. You know, so I'm this now worried about, damn, no brand is going to want to touch me. And I remember Native VML and some raps from Perno rocking up at a video shoot and to pitch this idea.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, you're the guy we're looking for. And at the time, man, you know, I'm in a weird space. I've just got the cops I'm dealing with.
Because you sued them, right? You sued them.
Yeah,
bucks.
We got the
and
bucks.
You won.
Yeah. Yeah, we
well,
won.
Well, let's just remind everybody, because this is now a while ago. Yeah. You were in a mistaken identity situation. They thought that you had stolen a car and they shot at you.
Yeah, so there's like six sides to that story. So they it was something like that. If we're to get into it, it sounds like a movie.
Yeah,
but it was mistaken identity. They thought I was...
And here you were, a citizen. You're not stealing cars. And they mistake you for a thief. They then shoot at you.
Yeah.
I mean, if you weren't famous, we'd probably never have heard this story and you might have died.
Easy.
Yeah. And this could happen to any South African.
Easy. Whoever they thought I was meant to die that night. That's exactly how it
did
went.
Did you ever
down.
Get an apology from the police, from the Minister of Police?
Yeah, so you know, before we went on trial, I mean, I was at the peak of my game.
Yeah.
2013. And I'm thinking to myself, geez, do I want to spend like years and years of my life in and out of court? Okay, cool. I'll make a deal with these guys. If you guys give a public apology, I'll get rid of the criminal case and then we'll just deal with the civil. And it went down just like that.
Yeah.
You know? And thank God, I mean, I had like a great legal team who understood that.
Have you got the bullet somewhere?
Nah. I just have.
You got the wound.
I just got the wounds.
Yeah.
Funny enough, my daughter was asking me about this morning.
Oh, really?
Jeez, my daughter's so 4 years old.
She doesn't know the story.
No, she knows the story eventually.
Oh, she does.
Yeah, okay. When she was two, I told her some other story. She's four now. She knows that her dad was shot. And this morning, she was asking me why it happened. Did they think I was a criminal? I'm like, yeah, they thought I was a criminal. It was a mistake. They, oh, okay. Very interesting.
But you were saying, so at that point,
yeah,
you don't expect a brand to want to be associated with you.
At all.
There's controversy. I mean, I know when I had my controversy with Mnet, I was worried that we were going to lose advertisers, and we did.
And everyone.
I mean, a lot of brands were like,
cowardly.
They pull out and they run away because they don't know how to deal with this controversy. And you know what? Yeah. The brands who don't want to deal with controversy, that controversy finds them.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, you think maybe you're an H&M, and I'm not picking on them here, but you think we're just doing our thing, we're just selling clothes, we don't want controversy. next thing you know, some top goes out and then you get the EFF trashing your stores.
And then
you can't avoid this in 2018, right? It's going to come and get you. You don't have a plan.
It happens to the best of us, yeah?
Right. So you're sitting there and you go, I can't believe this. These people want to work with me?
Yeah. So now, you know, and then it makes you think, damn, I guess it's true what they say that, you know, life's gifts come wrapped in sandpaper. You know what I'm saying? Like, are they for real? I remember we had so many of those boardroom meetings and I would like zone out because I was like, okay, this can't be real. So what we're about to do right now is we're going to tour Africa. I'm going to get profiled on every prime radio station, TV. We're talking billboards from OR Tambo and every prime location you can
videos,
think of, music video, adverts. Like, this is like the best record deal ever. You understand me?
Would never have happened if you'd stayed at a record company, would it?
Never. Right? And then the reason why I'm still independent. I've never, you know, a couple major labels have come and I've just been like, yo, I think I'm good where I'm at. You
yeah.
know? Yeah. And then second phase, you know, the first campaign was Africa's Absolute. Mm-hmm. They gave me a platform to tell my story, just how I came up, and all these pivotal moments where, you know, all these turning points. You know, I mean, I come from when I was a lighty, I was a gymnast. It all started there. So this imagination.
In the Northwest.
The best, here's the thing, here's what people don't know. You can look it up. In the Northwest, I mean, this is like Buputa Tswana days. Mm. Number one gymnast in the world at one point was from Mafikeng.
You're kidding.
For real. His name is Tseko Mokgotsi. He's somebody I'd love to tell a story about someday.
Is he still around?
He's still around. He's now president of gymnastics. I've read about him.
Well, thank God he eventually got some credit.
No, he's huge. And
Was he a great gymnast during the time when, like, the Bantustans were so obviously he didn't get any
this is around the homelands I grew up in
Lucas Mangope
R.I.P.
So he died the other day.
He left us, you know. So but you know, he produced guys like Tseko Mokgotsi. You know, this guy was like really phenomenal, like extremely talented. I just watch this guy do like 1,000 flips every day, like those peak performance type dudes, you know.
Is that what inspired you to get into?
So what inspired me was just like, geez, I want to learn how to do that. If I can do flips, I could probably do anything. So I became a flipper for about 7 years or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can you still do that stuff?
Yeah, my daughter does it now. Yeah, I can still do that stuff. Yeah.
I'm jealous of people like that. I've got a friend who does parkour, which is kind of like, you know, it's like a cool sort of street version of gymnastics.
Jeez, that's extreme.
It is extreme. And he's a big guy, but he manages to like use the gravity in his favor and to his advantage. He can do like turns in the air, somersaults. He can,
and he's not a lighty.
He's a big dude.
Damn,
and he's really good at it. When you watch people who have that kind of control over their body, it's beautiful. It's kind of like when you can hear someone has beautiful control of their voice.
Yeah,
you know, it's a skill.
That's the marriage. For me, it was just like, okay, cool. So if I can think it and then do it, if I can go, geez, I just visualize the double back somersault and land, and then 2 months you're doing it like over and over again. So you know, we told that story up until the time I fell in love with music, and so that was the first campaign. That was a success. We won most disruptive, innovative campaign, you know, and then we moved on to second phase. I'm like, damn, second? Okay, cool. Let's do this again. And they're like, listen, we want to fund your next album. But here's what we want to call it. We want to call it One Source. One Source is about how Africa's the birthplace of humanity and how we are all connected. We all come from here, da-da-da. And, you know, what's the source that you think connects us all? I guess for me, it's music. And then we came up with this African collaboration album. I had guys like Sako Dia on there, Pato Ranking Fire, Stone Boy. We went to Ghana, spent like 8 days and shot that amazing video. And for me, you know, it's like you get out of this bubble, You know, because when you're a South African artist, we're all in this bubble. We think. Yeah.
Well, yeah. All of us humans are. We exist with our little family or a little group of friends. Yeah. We don't get out of there. And we tend to start thinking that that's the whole world.
Yeah.
And especially in South Africa, you know, the rest of Africa, they get upset with us because we have a bit of a superiority complex.
Real.
And we shouldn't be full of ourselves. That we can learn way more from Ghana than Ghana can learn from us.
Dude, you know.
That's what I think.
It's exactly how I felt when I was over there. And, you know, to get it from them, and when you start to, you know, kind of get a bit of perspective and look at South Africa from outside, yeah, sometimes it's not so cool.
Well,
you know?
I think, you know, we get stuck in, because our past was so different to anyone else's.
Yeah.
We think our story is unique and that we're special.
Yeah.
And then we disregard other people's stories. And we forget that for them, their story is so much more real.
Yeah.
And the things that they're dealing with are the things that they consider as important as we consider our stories.
Real
it's
talk.
Just, yeah, it's like we've got to get off our high horses and start listening to each other.
Mm.
And I do think that one source... I mean, I just love the message in that.
Yeah.
In that we all do come from one place. We all have one origin. And it's been borne out in archaeology. I mean, they found our ancestors.
It's right there. Yeah. You know, this is not some shit we drummed
up. Our unified amatlos. they lived here.
Yeah.
And we need to get over our shit.
That's it. You know, so to also just get into a space where it's now purposeful, you know, it's not just about another smash and make people dance and like, yeah, you know, there was a little way out of my comfort zone and I've learned so much from it, you know.
Was there ever a stage where you felt like you might be, because I know critics of yours would have said you were selling out. Did you ever get to a point where you were like, oh, these guys might have a point?
You know what? I was worried about not being able to connect with my South African fans, right?
Like you were being drawn away.
Yeah, and I remember, you know, one of my good friends who's also like a business associate saying to me, dude, you got to understand, like, real talk, South Africans are xenophobic. So you trying to position yourself like you're this, like, African king guy, muso, we're going to totally disconnect with you, bro. We're not going to, you know, and... That was tough, you know what I mean? And listen, we didn't scoop a Summer for that amazing video. We didn't scoop a Metro.
They ignored you, basically.
Yeah, but we scooped a Can Lion, Bookmarks, Lurie's, you know, just a whole new level for me, you know? Yeah.
But do you think South Africans, and I mean, this is such a tough question because it's purely on your experience, but do you think that we have a problem with one of our own who does well, not just here, but outside of here? I mean, when Trevor started that Daily Show, people were saying shit things about him.
Yeah.
When just the other day, you know, Brahu died. And a lot of people during the time when Brahu was making huge waves overseas and all over the continent, when he was doing that, a lot of people here said, he's abandoning us.
That is so true.
What is that? Is that because we have a fear of abandonment because our dads don't play enough of a part in our lives? What is it that we can't allow people to go and experience greatness somewhere else and then come back and bring it home?
We just have this sense of entitlement, you know. It's like I come across fans that will remind you that Aston you're driving right now, we bought it. That house you live in, we did that. Don't forget that we, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, it's true, but you don't have to rub it all over.
I would slice a piece off of the spare tire and I'd give it to them and say, here, you can have
here
it
you
back.
Go.
Now stop telling me it's yours. Because that's not true.
Or matter of fact, listen, I'm a little behind. So
can you help me with the payments?
Actually, you know, so.
But I mean, do you believe that? Because people say your fans made you and all that stuff. And sure, you've always been very grateful to your fans. I've always seen you making an effort with your fans.
Yeah.
It's not like you're one of those people who thinks they have nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
But they can't claim they bought you a car.
Yeah, because you
That's
had to
right.
you had to work hard just to put a smile on their face.
They
right?
don't see you after the show when you're exhausted and you have to go and do another one.
Yeah, they disconnect from the how hard you had to work just to impress them. You know what I'm saying? It's not like, you know, it was just handed to you on a silver platter. Yeah.
And their effort involves what? Going to see a show every now and then and maybe buying your music.
Yeah.
It's not as much hard work as they think it is.
Yeah. But that's a good point.
What I'll you... say it. You don't have
it. I know. You got the balls for it.
Now, I'm interested. I mean, you say that one of your biggest years was 2013.
Yeah.
But here we are. It's now 2018. I would almost say that every year has got better from then.
Yeah. It took me a while to...
You got a lot of awards that year and all that stuff. Yeah. But that's not the most important thing.
It took me a while to acknowledge that fact, right? It took me a while to embrace this new guy, this new, you know, me, the creative revolutionary. You know, I just wasn't seeing like that because I was chasing the old buzz. You know what I mean? Because there's still nothing like a screaming fan, you know, and jumping on there at the summers and go, I just want to thank mom right now. I want to thank God. You know what I mean? Like those moments will still be like a highlight for me.
Yeah, of course.
And when everybody thinks you're number one, right? And then you start moving from there to now, significance over success. And well, no matter how much you try, be the old you, it just doesn't work. It's like that part of you is dead. Right now, you got to focus on being significant and doing purposeful.
But also, you know, if you're at number one, there's only one way you can go.
It's down.
Right?
Yeah.
And then people want to like tell you, oh, you're not number one anymore. But actually, what you've got to do is take number one and evolve in a new direction and learn new things and do new stuff.
Yeah.
Which is precisely what you've done.
Thank you, buddy.
There's nothing worse than those people who are always going to chase the same number one. Because don't you think that's frustrating?
Jeez.
If you don't realize that every time, you're a failure.
Exactly. That's like never chase like an old high. It's like it's gone. It's gone.
I wonder how many musos do that though.
Hey man, that is like one of the worst drugs ever for musos. You know, the number one spot. You know, we were actually having this conversation the other day with who was there? Was it? But I think I was with Elias or something. We were just talking about, does number one still matter? You know?
Well, how do you even measure? Like, this is something I want to know from you.
Yeah.
Is how do you measure whether you're number one or not these days? Because we know album sales count for nothing, right?
Exactly.
I mean, who buys albums? Even singles, even if you release stuff on iTunes, you can't really rank someone on that.
I was saying to somebody, you know how embarrassing it is to actually even flaunt a gold plaque these days.
How many do you have to sell?
It's 15,000.
Yes, that's ridiculous.
I can't have this conversation.
Michael Jackson, in order to go like triple platinum with Thriller, I think he had to sell 45 million albums in a week or whatever.
Somebody teach these kids.
Yeah, I mean 15,000. Just shh, if you've got a gold, shh.
Just keep it on the hush.
Because you also, you were in that golden zone
from
a music point of view where you got to experience what the old music business was like.
Yeah.
Record companies and the charts and the radio airplay and that kind of world. And you also made the moves that put you front and center in the new music economy.
Yeah.
Where it's about partnerships, merchandise, performances.
Yeah.
And doing things differently, creating campaigns, involving yourself, integrating into new places. Those are things that if you stay in the old, you'll never understand. And if you only knew the new, you wouldn't know what it was like in that golden era of music where you could sit at home and, Brenda Fassie, if she didn't do concerts for 3-4 weeks, it was okay because her album sales were bringing in plenty of money.
True. So true. So true. We are blessed to have lived in that era and be exposed. I was telling the story about I remember when Jabba
Double HP
when Double HP got a clearance. Is it called a clearance when the record label writes you a letter to let you know
you can use a track?
No. I forgot the term for it, but it's when they let you go. When they say, listen.
Oh, they release you.
When they release you. Sorry, buddy. You're not hitting the numbers. You got to go. It was him and Fistas.
Yes.
I was there that day. And he was teary-eyed. It was embarrassing. And, you know, at the time, he was like the only guy rapping amongst Mandoza, Cheese Corp.
And he was Brenda, the only one doing it in Setswana.
Only one doing it in Setswana. Only guy signed to EMI CCP. So he took one for the team, you know, and I tell the story about like how significant WHP is and how revolutionary he is, geez, that time was tough for hip hop, you know. But thank God we actually got to experience that, and that's why we're going to do so well in the new era. You know what I mean? And not a lot of us can actually come, not a lot of us have been able to convert and sort of switch up.
Well, I know he had a really rough time. Yeah. I mean, he didn't, I had him in here, what, a year or two ago?
Yeah.
And we had a great conversation, and I think he's in a much better place now. But he was very honest about how there was a point where he wanted to kill himself.
Dude, yeah.
And he was not happy.
I popped in to see him the other day. He's in a great space, you know, new music.
I'm so happy
to hear that. He's a jabber, you know, we all fell in love with.
He's such a good guy, huh?
Dude, this guy, like, you know, how we came up was WHP had this vision, Motswako, and he actually, you know, I come from a group. He actually came up with that name. He had us living at his apartment here in Joburg. His mom didn't know about it. He went and checked up with this girl a couple of blocks away from there. And he was like, you guys just write music every day. One day we're going to be huge. He believed in it more than anyone I know. And we are like literally living his dream right now. Very special guy.
That's something I didn't know.
Yeah.
I know he's one of those people who pioneered so much and who cares. Like, he cares about music. He cares about musicians.
Yeah.
But I didn't know he did that.
No, he kind of did that for every... Casper will attribute the success to, you know, Jabba, Morafe, everyone. Like, he's always broken bread and given, you know, guys an opportunity to shine. Real talk.
What a guy.
Yeah.
Was it a big deal to you to open for Drake, or was that just a gig?
It was just a gig. It was a big deal then, until his security came in and said, we're going to need you guys to leave right now.
And is it true that when you do those support acts, they turn down the monitors, they reset the desk so that it's shitty, so that he'll sound better? And it gives you like to chop you off at the knees, basically.
It's worst when you experience it real time.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you see them actually walk in with the real sound and turn it up all the way.
And you're like, what was I playing with?
What the fuck? You know? Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you know, we did that. And then we toured with Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah. Now, that's a talented man.
Yeah. But, you know, Miller actually had to pay for that handshake. They had to pay him extra just to engage and interact with us.
You're joking.
Real talk.
He wouldn't do it?
No, I don't think he wouldn't. But
they were just after more money?
I think, you know, no matter how humble these American rappers are, like, you know, there's just a certain way they roll.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they do not do well is interact with us.
Well, maybe it's also their people. I mean, maybe he's just got a really...
shitty team.
Well, maybe they're not shitty. They're like seriously... just profiteering, gouging capitalists who just want to make a killing out of every spare second in Kendrick's day. Maybe he's okay with it.
Yeah, but that was a way better experience than the Drake. You know, we did three cities, Durban, Joburg, Cape Town. Crazy.
Amazing. Do you rate time. Kendrick as a rapper?
Best. The best we've had in a long time.
I agree with you.
Best.
Like, of the new school... he's right up there, right?
He's amazing. He's amazing. He's also got a good balance of the old and the new. He's got this old soul. But damn, this guy never stops pushing himself, you know, lyrically. His K, his delivery. He's just like 100 out of 100.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
You've also met, while we're talking about celebrities, you spent a lot of time with Wyclef.
Jeez, right? Same WhatsApp group.
Yeah,
so Wyclef, jeez, man, what a guy. So at Cannes, right?
Yeah.
Now, here's another moment, like, when you, like, 80% out of your comfort zone, you're at Cannes, you're there to give a talk about One Source and Africa's, like, creative revolution, and all this stuff. I'm like, damn, how did I even get here? This is crazy.
Because that is the top of the advertising pyramid.
Yeah, you know, and... and, you know, little did I know, he was part of their jury for One Source.
So he knew what you were up to. You didn't have to explain it to him.
Nada. So one of Jason, CEO of VML, was like, yo, Wyclef is a fan. I was like, oh, for real? Wow.
What a thing to hear.
Cool. We scoop a can lion. Amazing night. Following day, I'm like, I want to go check out the Shazam talk. On my way there, I see him. I'm like, starstruck. I'm like, yo, there he is. Then he sees me and he goes, there's that dude. Then he spits one of my lines and he goes, Africa no longer riding jungle. Then he laughs at me like, yo, you didn't know I knew your shit. And then he starts calling everybody. There's another lady, Madeline, who used to manage, I think, J. Cole, and she's also just been in the game for years. Another lady from NBA. Next thing you know, there's like 10 people around me.
And I mean, this is Wyclef. This is the guy we used to listen to when we were at high school, man.
Jeez, dude. And then, you know, we hit it off, and he starts telling me stories about working on that, the Score album, when he was like 18 in his dungeon. We chat. He's like, okay, let's roll. I'm speaking on the Shazam stage. I'm like, oh, boom. I join the entourage. We go over there. He talks and he keeps making reference of this Coolie China guy, like what they're doing in South Africa now. I'm like, damn, this is amazing. He starts performing. He calls me on stage to perform with him. I was just like, damn. Sometimes.
No warning?
No. Just like, yo, I'm going to call, you know, my South African brother to come on stage. And now, you know, it's crazy how you go full circle, right? When we were starting out, we didn't have any producers making their own beats. So you would go out and buy like a single.
Yeah.
And one of the singles we bought was Ready or Not.
Here I come. You can't hide.
So I've written stuff
Lauryn
to
Hill,
that beat.
Fugees.
Exact. Yeah. And now this guy's calling me on stage to come rap on that same beat. And it was just like out of body, crazy experience.
That's like full circle.
That is full circle, my friend. Yeah. That is so dope. And you know, it didn't feel like he's such a genuine dude.
Mm.
Yeah. And then, you know, we exchanged numbers and we've been chatting ever since. So I was actually going to get him down for One Source Live. Unfortunately, he's booked. He was really excited about coming down. That was...
Well, there's still the future. You don't know.
Exactly. Exactly.
This guy is... you're on WhatsApp basis with the dude.
It's amazing, dude. It's so surreal.
Do you ever send him porn?
I probably should. I think we're at that porn phase.
I always know with your guy friends, when you're on a certain like level, you like when you get something funny or something like really sexy, you like send it on. Check this out, man.
I think we're at a porn level right now.
All right, so you mentioned your daughter earlier, Nia Lefika, and this is a big thing because it changes your perspective on the world.
Yeah.
No matter what kind of life you've lived up to that moment, everything's different afterwards, right?
Yeah. Jeez.
And suddenly you're like responsible for a human being. It's a big deal.
It's a big deal, bro. And, but I gotta say, you know, sometimes you get lucky and you have a kid who's like just has the most beautiful heart. And I guess every parent will say that about their kid. But like, I think, you know, she's freaking amazing. She's just a good kid, like overall, you know what I mean? And I didn't go through any trouble twos and none of that stuff.
Really? She's it was just easy?
I just hope she doesn't give me a freaking heart attack when she's in her teens, because she's so amazing, right?
Well, no guy is ever going to be good enough for your daughter. You know that.
Yeah, no.
You're going to hate them all.
I'm
going to meet them at the door with a gun.
I'm going to F up these dudes. But I think I'm going to have a little fun with these boys.
But I think they'll be very intimidated. I think it's going to be very hard for a guy to like say to her, ooh, I don't know if I want to go home and meet your dad, you know, because you'll have this reputation that precedes you. That can be just as scary.
And that's another thing that, you know, having a child kind of instills in you, that just kind of lights a fire under your ass that, okay, cool, now I have to become larger than life. Now I have to, you know, be significant. I have to, you know, my life must mean something. I must stand for something because I have this kid that I have to, you know, be an example for.
You know, one of the things I like about you is you walk the talk, and you actually you have a very deep level of of kind of conscience and involvement in the stuff that made you who yeah. you are. And I mean, I saw, for example, that you attended the memorial service of Professor Gyorapetse Khositsine.
Yeah.
And I wondered what it was that, because you don't grandstand, you wouldn't go to be seen.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
went because this man and his writing made a difference in your life.
Yeah, yeah, and he's also our uncle. So,
oh, so you're related to him?
Yes, 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 yes.
Oh,
yes.
So, wow, I didn't know that. I didn't know. Yeah, I thought you were just a.
Yeah, yeah. So, so Papa Willie's got family in Mafikeng. I mean, mm-hmm. his sisters, his siblings, and his mum is from there, and well, live there. And I remember meeting. I mean, I didn't know of him until probably I was like in my late. You know, teens, and it was this man who's a poet who was in exile, and you know, had to learn about him, and he would come over with his kid Tebe, who's now Earl Sweatshirt. I don't know if you've ever heard of
wow.
Earl Sweatshirt.
That's his son.
That's his son. It's crazy. Every time I told
what
the story,
a talented family.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So you know, and you know what really truly inspired me about him was his like his body of work, his stature, how great this guy is, but how humble he was. I remember being at his funeral thinking, damn, I wish this guy could see how this is going down right now. I've never been to a funeral like this or at this level. Like I have to big up the ANC this time for just
sure.
giving him the best send off ever, you know.
Hey, they need kudos wherever they can get it
right now.
Just give it to them. But you know, I think yeah. about him, and I think about what he did for Setswana, and I think about what you've done for it and what HHP has done. Yeah. And I love the language because yeah. my producer Tabo taught me a lot of Tswana words,
yeah.
and I learned to appreciate the sounds of Tswana, which are very different.
Where did
to
you grow up? Pretoria, right?
Pretoria, yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So, and I also think watching like Bop TV when I was a kid,
oh,
and listening to yeah. Bob Mabena doing his shows
yeah.
on like Radio Bop, I think there was something there about, you know, a great language
yeah.
Becomes greater when it has people like Professor Khositsile
yeah.
and an opportunity to shine
yeah.
through rappers, through musicians, through poets, through literature,
yeah.
through the television, the radio. And maybe that is why Tswana has this almost larger-than-life appeal. And if you look at the contribution of Tswana speakers to media in South Africa,
wow.
it's massively like weighted in that direction.
Yeah.
And that's not to say the other languages aren't great and they don't have their greats.
And they don't toot their own, you know, their own horn
no,
much,
but,
right?
But I think that Tswana has got a layer that's been added by great people
yeah.
that has made it a language that can compete in places that some of the others might not be able to. And I do think that's special. And I do think we kind of need to acknowledge that. And if you listen to Motswe Ding and you yeah. hear the kind of stuff that they're doing, there's a huge depth of support for local stuff that goes on there.
Yeah.
The language is spoken well,
dude,
you know.
Till this day.
But if you speak to someone who can speak Setswana right.
Yeah.
And they don't throw in other words.
No. They don't mix it up. They don't mince it up.
It kind of reminds me of like if you speak to someone in Germany who speaks like what they call Hochdeutsch.
Oh.
It's like this. It's like this high German.
Mm.
Or if you speak to like someone from Nkandla, for the want of a better, you speak to someone who speaks like proper old school Zulu.
Pure Zulu, yeah.
They don't mix anything else in there.
Yeah.
That's the language, the way that was spoken 200 years ago.
Yeah.
There's something beautiful about that. And Tswana's got that going for it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know who does
it's like
that?
Like a cultural repository, you know?
You know who does that so well? And he didn't even go to like a Setswana school, Stone. Jeez.
Stone
Seate. Yeah, Stone Seate's like passion for Setswana is crazy,
and it's a beautiful language.
It's a beautiful language, and we should definitely poach you, man. Because damn, you've just rapped Botswana in the most beautiful.
Well,
way.
It is. It's magic. I mean, listen, this is. You could say a lot about Bopu Tswana and Lucas Mangope, and when he died, a lot of people were, you know, this guy was a dangerous human being, and he was bad, and he was. His record was messy. But I do think that there was a legacy, and you know, you could say this about Hitler, so I want to be careful.
Yeah.
You know, he built the Autobahn, so he's a hero. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I think Tswana was allowed to develop in ways that other languages were not, because I think he pulled the wool over that apartheid government's eyes some of the time in order to advance Tswana culture. And I don't think that that's a loss. I think that's a gain.
Definitely. And I think that's why, you know, I made reference of Tseko Mokgotsi, that Chilean ass dude, that like, that's what we're going to take from that era and that, and, you know, obviously, you know, the other crazy stuff that happened.
You're allowed
towards
to cherry
the
pick.
End.
You're allowed to pick, kinda, the, pick, you know, the excellence out. Yeah. I mean, why not? Right?
Definitely.
And obviously that's not to say we don't have respect for all those people who had to suffer and were treated badly under that regime. And I understand what that regime meant. It was it was constituted by the apartheid government, but there's a silver lining.
Exactly. We can't ignore the flip side to that. You know?
So now, if you look back, are there any people in the record business that you'd like to go knock on the door of and say, hey, I told you so?
All
have
the
you
time.
Ever been tempted to like, to just time. Go up to, or if you bump into one of them, like you're shopping in Rosebank or something, and you, some old record exec who's now obviously, you know, not a big deal, is walking around. Do you ever walk past them and go, maybe I should just point out to them?
I've had those moments so many times, but those Balis have serious amnesia. Like,
they don't remember, hey? They have their own version of
Yeah. You know,
they think, oh no, we gave him an opportunity. Yeah. We were part of his success.
Yeah. Almost like they will go, you see, I was right. Now look, you know, like it's like I've ran into a couple of them, and they applaud me, and they, which is, yeah, like almost like, let's not even go there. Let's not, yeah.
And you just shrug it off because you're like, I'm not going to be.
Yeah, let's, yeah.
But have you ever had anyone take credit for something that you did and it annoyed you? Like it annoyed you enough to say something?
Yeah, I've had that a bunch of times, but you know, I don't know. I kind of let it slide, you know? Yeah. I always feel like you got to pick your battles, you know?
And maybe it's not worth hanging around in negativity here. Yeah?
You feel me?
You'd rather move on to the next inspiration.
Period.
Yeah, I like that.
One Source Live is the new inspiration. And I can't wait for you to come. So you're going to be there, right?
Sure.
So 24th of March.
Tell me what's happening.
So, you know, so I don't know if you've heard of Mufftown Heights. So Mufftown Heights is a hip-hop event that I'm co-founder of. And what inspired it was like, there's so many of us here in Joburg, and I wanted to create a stage where we could sort of throw a reunion party, do some collaborations.
Where is it going to be?
So that takes place at Newtown, and then we just recently took that back to Mafikeng. And now we have this new event that is like smaller, but the experience is colossal. And it's called One Source Live. We've got like five creative revolutionaries. Trevor Stierman, who's like photography / art connoisseur, amazing guy. Fabrice from Benin. We've got another guy from Kenya by the name of Osborne, who's a photographer as well. Shoma Josie. Have you heard of Shoma Josie? She's of Tsonga lyricist. Amazing, beautiful girl. We've done some amazing collaborations as well. And yours truly, Montauk Originator. And we're just going to curate this. We're going to build this world where we're not looking for 10,000 people in there, but we're going to give them this like crazy experience where they're going to, you know, experience art, music.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Fashion, everything.
So you say this is in March?
This is in March 24th.
Okay.
Yeah. So another collaboration.
Are there going to be tickets? Is it invite only? How does it work?
So there's going to be tickets. So we're still in the creation, you know, phase. And I think all will be revealed. You know, what we've done so far is we put out that amazing short film with, have you checked it out, where we're all superheroes, I play the dragon.
Yeah, I have seen that.
Yeah.
I saw it the other day. It was on, I think it was on Vuzu or something.
Yeah. So what we have right now is the date.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're still coming up with some ideas.
It was the Grammys this week. When you watched that, I mean, you went there, what was it, last year?
Yeah, I went there last year with the...
What's it like to be there?
it was like really cool. It was, you know, and I think because I was just really taken care of, like VIP.
Oh, people were taking you everywhere.
The suite we had, yeah, it was
looking after you.
It was amazing.
Food, but drink.
I was taken care of. The only thing it made me realize was just, damn, wow, okay, cool. You know, it's like for me, it's like the closer you get to the finish line, the further it gets. Just made me realize, damn, this world is really huge. Now the world is literally my oyster, you know. So I need to get over the South Africa hustle and start thinking globally.
Did it make you feel pressure?
You know, at certain points, a little inferior. Just a little. Just
I know what you mean.
You know what I mean?
I've been to New York. I love New York.
Yeah.
Right? It's a beautiful city. And I stay with these friends of mine. And when I come back, I feel poor and I feel unimportant. Even though I'm happy. I mean, I know you're a happy guy.
And you, Gareth Cliff.
You come back and you're like,
maybe we should.
It's not because you don't love South Africa, you don't love what you're doing here, but it just, you're in a small pond.
Exactly.
So when you go to the Grammys, I mean, who's in this crew? Are you moving around on your own with your own crew?
So I'm moving around with the CMO of Perno, Absolute.
Oh, wow.
And then some guys from New York, the New York team, some from Sweden. So, you know, and I'm like the only like rapper dude there. And I remember...
Are the rest all business people?
Yeah. Business, but it's all Perno business, you know.
You're the only one who's really got business being at the Grammys.
Real talk.
all these musicians are up there, and these guys are like, "Well, how many cases of Absolute do we have to sell?" You're like, "Listen to that bridge on that song."
That's exactly.
They don't understand.
Nah, they don't get it. But I had to ask the question. I remember asking the question. You know, this is like at the after party. It's all good and well, and everybody's like, you know, giving me that look, like, "Who's this guy?" You know.
Oh.
You know, like, he must be really important because
that's a good place to be because you can be mysterious, right?
Exactly.
You don't have to reveal all.
Yeah, you know, that was nice. I kind of enjoyed that.
Anyone come up that is really, really well known and say, "Hey, how's it, man?"
Doesn't happen? I'm not.
Do people just give knowing looks?
You know, everyone has got like bodyguards around them and everybody's like, you know. So, I mean, the Grammys versus the Cannes.
You'd take Can anytime.
Can anytime.
Really?
Can look like, I don't know if you follow.
And it's beautiful there. It's on the, you're on the French Riviera.
Jeez, and everyone there looks like a mutant. Everyone just looks like it's Professor X's house.
Wow.
That guy. Everyone is like out of this world in terms of their thinking and whatever. You know, like everyone is great. It didn't, very, like versus like when I met like the Summers or the Mamas, they just move a little different. And the shit that they come up with is just really phenomenal. It's the stuff that changes the world, literally. So being at Cannes was just necessary for me.
What's the most exciting thing you're doing right now? I mean, what do you love doing right now? And what can you leave behind?
What I'm enjoying right now is developing the next generation of artists, creatives, and...
But you're not saying you're finished.
No, hell no.
Yeah. So when you say that, you're saying in tandem with what you're up to.
Exactly.
You're going to be giving other people an opportunity.
Exactly. You know, and I mean, I had to, you know, I mean, I'd say the best reference is definitely Jay-Z, who's now become an institution.
Right.
He's not really competing with anybody.
No.
Right? Puff Daddy's another one. You know, he's still an entertainer, but he's still like developing artists, creatives, and you know what I mean? So, yeah, we've got the space, which is like we're building an incubator for creatives right now.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's called My Throne. And yeah. So
what are you tired of? What can you afford to leave behind now? What have you had enough of?
I'd say fame, maybe.
That's an interesting answer. It's not important to you to be recognized when you're walking.
I think it's not
to lunch with someone.
It's not important for me to chase for it.
Yeah. It's a byproduct of what you do, but it's not the goal.
Yeah, it's not the it's exactly. And it sounds really twisted, right?
I'm on your side.
It's not twist. Like for instance, over the weekend we had the Met, and you've got like seven people who are like, you should be at the Met right now. Everyone is here. You, this is good for your career. Blah blah blah.
Exposure.
Exposure. You need to be seen.
Yeah.
No, I'm gonna spend this weekend working on, you know, just we spend the weekend, you know, curating content, shooting some videos, making some music, you know what I mean? And
that's your work. That's what you love.
That's the grind. And when
you
it's
need to be seen.
And when it's time to do that, we'll do that,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. When you got something to, some product to push out there that you want people to know about.
There we go.
All right, I love it. It's always good to catch up with you, man. And listen, congratulations on the success you've had so far. You are blazing a trail.
Thank you, my friend.
And, you know, if we're ever going to have our own Jay-Z or P. Diddy in terms of someone who moves out of just being the creative and moves into being their own empire builder, it's going to have to be you. So I hope from my lips to God's ears, because you're already laying the tracks, man.
I think he's listening. Yeah, thank you, my friend. I appreciate that.
It's good to see you, man. Thank you. Kulichana, everybody.
This is CliffCentral.com.